current state on WKAR. Why do we need sleep anyway? Well, maybe this isn't a great question to ask on a Monday morning, but some new research indicates that sleep may actually be what enables the brain's cleaning crew to keep things chemically tidy in there. A Danish study published this fall in the journal Science has implications both for our daily mental well-being and possibly for longer-term concerns like dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And to get a better idea of the findings, Current State's Melissa Benmark spoke with a Dr. Peter Todd about this issue. It sounds fascinating.
It really is. It sounds like a groundbreaking study just in terms of what we understand about the brain and the function of sleep. And Dr. Todd is an assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at the University of Michigan. And what he started out with was explaining what up until now the scientific community has traditionally thought actually happened in our brains while we were asleep.
The purpose of sleep is one of the great mysteries of science. If you think about it from an evolutionary perspective, sleep is probably a bad idea. So falling asleep in the woods puts you at risk for being eaten by a bear or some other creature. And we know that sleep is required across really a wide variety of species, everything from flies and worms up to man. And if you don't get sleep, then that's actually lethal. It's not survivable. So the ideas about what sleep was doing based on that were unclear. Some people thought it was about decreasing your chance of being out in dangerous environments. Some people thought it was about, we've known for a long time that you need to be able to sleep to form and consolidate some new memories, and that there are some changes in the brain that happen during sleep. But a lot of, beyond that, I think there's really been a bit of a black box about what sleep's major purpose is.
The Danish biologist who led this study had postulated that the brain actually had kind of its own equivalent of the body's lymph system, some channels of liquids that cleared out the toxins left over from the day's brain activity. But she couldn't really check on that. In fact, the article I read said that they've been thinking that this might be the case for about 100 years. Couldn't really check until there was a way to see inside the brain. Talk a little bit about the technology that enables us to see fluid movement, in this case, a mouse brain.
Yeah, this is a really fascinating study that was done. So they utilized two techniques that are a little different than has been done in the past. So first, they use a system where they can actually make a small, they basically shave down the skull to make it very, very thin. They can use a microscope that can actually see through that very thin skull layer into the brain tissue. And then they use a dye that they can inject into the space around the neurons in the brain. And then they can track the movement of that dye using this fancy microscope called a two-photon microscope. Using this sort of combination of things, they were able to look at the flow of the extracellular fluid that exists around the brain. So most of the brain is made up of neurons and other cells, the things that we think about as doing all the communication and thinking in the brain. And then in the space around these cells, there is a fluid that flows around, an extracellular fluid. So they were able to use these techniques to then image that extracellular fluid moving within space and determine whether it was moving at the same pace when the animals were asleep or awake.
And so this interstitial space kind of opens up when they're asleep?
I guess the best way I could think of explaining it would be like Mardi Gras in New Orleans. So if you were on Bourbon Street at night during Mardi Gras, the streets would be filled with activity. And really, even if you wanted to walk around the streets, it would be very difficult to do so because there's so many people and you'd be bumping up against everybody. And so when much like that in the brain, the neurons in the brain are very active, and when they're active, they actually swell a little bit. They're a little bit larger, and so it literally fills up those spaces, and the streets get narrower. At the same time, if you were trying to clean up the trash that's being thrown down during the Mardi Gras parade while the parade was happening, you would have a hard time making much of a dent because it would be very hard for the cleaning supplies to get to where they needed to. But the next morning, after everybody's gone to sleep, the amount of activity in the streets has dropped dramatically. And the ability of the cleaning staff to get in to actually clean up the mess is much greater. And the same thing happens in the brain. When you go to sleep, there's less neuronal activity. And when the neurons are less active, they're smaller. And when they're smaller, there's more space around them for this fluid to flow. And like a river, that allows it to just flow at a much more rapid pace and allows the clearance mechanisms for getting rid of these toxic buildup of products is much more efficient.
Is this as radical as it sounds to me? I mean, it's to me, it's like you like discovering a whole new set of blood vessels or something in your body.
Well, so we've known that this kind of system is in place elsewhere in the body. So there's a system in the rest of the body known as the lymphatic system. And so when blood flows from your heart out into, say, your muscle or other organs, some of the fluid from the blood leaks out into that fluid space, into the extracellular space. And there's always been a need by the body to get rid of that and clear it by a different way. And that's a system called the lymphatic system. So maybe many people know what lymph nodes are, those nodes that swell in your neck when you get sick.
Right.
And so that's part of a way to sort of retrieve that extracellular fluid and also a way to get rid of extra junk that builds up in those tissues that you can't get to with a closed system like blood vessels. And so the working model of what was going on in the brain before this study was that there were actually mechanisms in place within the cells in the brain to sort of recycle locally these products. But there has been suggestions of this kind of idea that there is something like the lymphatic system in the brain that have dated back a long time. So that idea itself is not novel, but nobody's really found a good way to test for its existence and understand its major roles.
So given that many, many of us have sleep deprivation, what happens to our cognitive functioning in the short term if we are not essentially getting the street sweepers in overnight?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've known for a long time that cognitive performance in the setting of acute sleep deprivation is worse, and significantly worse. And to be honest, this is, in the medical community, this is one of the reasons that we've changed the way we have medical residents do their care.
I wondered about that.
It used to be, and I was one of those doctors that would stay up for 36 hours in a row taking care of patients. And I can tell you from personal experience that, you know, the next day after having not slept all night, you're simply not as smart. You can't, you have to, you know, we would often make sure that we had somebody double check everything we were doing because our chances of making a significant error were much higher in those settings. And so We've known that that's true, that you actually are by testing, not as smart or not as quick in the setting of sleep deprivation. But, I think for the acute effects, this could reflect some of that. But I think the bigger repercussions are about questions related to chronic sleep deprivation. So we in America sleep probably an hour less than we used to 20 or 30 years ago. And even less than that compared to people 100 years ago. And so there's a question about what the long-term repercussions of chronic sleep deprivation or chronic poor sleep would have on people in terms of their ability to clear metabolites from the brain. The evidence for those is less strong than it is for the acute effects, where it's pretty clear. But I think it's a field that's sort of growing in terms of interest.
I've also read that some of the brain's leftover waste is associated with Alzheimer's and dementia later in life. Are there potential long-term effects when people don't get enough sleep? And does this study kind of point toward that?
The short answer is that the studies we have in people are not as clear as this study that was performed here in a mouse model. There's been a number of studies dating back before this. We've known that the Alzheimer's protein, which gets broken down into a small piece of a protein called A-beta, accumulates in the space between cells in the brain, and that accumulation of this protein into aggregates in the brain called plaques is associated with Alzheimer's disease and associated with memory problems, both in animal models and in people. And so we've known for a while that actually where that A-beta protein gets produced directly correlates with where these aggregates or plaques build up in the brain, and that the relative levels of that protein fluctuate with sleep and wake and fluctuate with brain activity. And so that's been known for a while, for probably 5 or 6 years. And really the finding in this study is that up until now, we've been thinking about that entirely on the production end. We've been thinking about it as though this A-beta protein is being overproduced when you're awake and then decreased production when you're asleep. And there's pretty good evidence that that does happen. But this now sort of looks at the other side of that, the clearance of this protein. And I think that it does suggest that enhancing clearance of the protein might be an effective therapeutic target in people who are at risk for Alzheimer's disease or have Alzheimer's disease. With that said, the studies we have in patients, looking at patients who have significant sleep problems or looking at patients that have things like obstructive sleep apnea that lead to poor sleep, don't necessarily show as strong of a correlation with the eventual development of Alzheimer's disease as you would expect if this was the primary cause of the condition.
Well, thank you for helping us to understand this study a little bit better. And Dr. Peter Todd, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.